It's going to be not half bad, the...
All bad?
The psychiatrist couch edition.
Ooh, I like that.
Going to need some therapy.
What does our psychiatrist couch look like? I mean, are there posters of, like... I mean, there's got to be posters of inspirational quotes and days gone by. I'm thinking that picture of Chris Mullin and cutting down the nets in the Big East at the Madison Square Garden. What would Rutgers have?
Inspirational? Probably Jeff Billett beating Georgetown at the buzzer in the Big East tournament game.
And
the Nets.
Wow, that's
the Nets played at the rack. I'm at rock bottom here.
You should be.
Rock bottom.
So let's start talking about your rock bottomness. Let's sit you on the couch and let's discuss all the things that are wrong.
Yeah, well, hey, things aren't all happy and shiny in St. John's land either, but
No, they are not. We'll get there, too.
But anyway, this is Not Half Bad. I am Dave White of OnTheBanks.com, the Rutgers blog. I haven't even brought myself to recap yesterday's game yet.
I'm Norman of Rumble in the Garden. I have taken the time to have recaps up from Friday night's game, which was interesting and lackluster. But it is Sunday, November 24th. We're getting close to Thanksgiving, and we're probably not going to talk about a lot of things to be thankful for, because everything that we need to talk about are things to really worry about. Should we start with Rutgers? Because that's like, Rutgers has had the far worst week. Or should we start with St. John's? Because St. John's has had an interesting week with some very dirty undercurrents.
Well, I'm still stunned. But I guess we were talking Rutgers, and you are watching it now, so I might as well start there.
So, Rutgers. Wow.
Yeah. Well, the week started out good. Monday night, they played Canisius. They did a heck of a defensive job on Billy Barron, especially in the second half. They pulled away. I think they won by 12.
Mm-hmm.
So that was nice. Jerome Seegers had a good game.
15, actually. 66-51.
9 assists. Yeah, 15. They won by 15. I think Seegers had 17 points, 9 assists. So things were looking up after, especially on the defensive end, because after, you know, the defensive problems they'd been having against Yale and against UAB, you thought, oh, maybe, you know, they're turning a corner a little bit because Barron's a good player. That was the first night of the NIT, preseason NIT.
And things were good, and there was a chance to make it to Madison Square Garden.
Yeah. And then they played Drexel. And that was a weird game because I felt by my eye that Rutgers was the better team. And I'm not a blame the refs guy, but I do not get the new fouling calls. Because I felt like Drexel, athletic and big and clutch, really bumped Rutgers all over the place without calls. But I also felt that on the other end, on Rutgers' defensive end, there were a lot of cheap calls. And while Drexel won the game and played better, I felt like it should have been a closer game. Rutgers lost by 11. And I felt that if the game was called fairly on both sides, it would have been closer.
Mm-hmm. I do see that the last 10 minutes saw Drexel score 28 points and Rutgers scoring 18. So it seems like it was a closer game before that.
Yeah, it was close. The first 30 minutes was close. I think Rutgers was down 3 at halftime, maybe 5.
Mm-hmm.
With 9 minutes left, they got to within 1 at one point.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to remember. There's been so much.
Yeah, it's about 9 minutes left. They got within 1.
They get to within 1, and then I think Drexel broke off a 9-0 run by Tavon Allen, mm-hmm. like all on his own. He hit 3 threes from the corner that Rutgers just did not cover. And then it was just a matter of them, Rutgers trying to get to the net, trying to get fouled, and just getting bumped and mugged all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And no calls. But, you know, whatever. They lost the game. They got out-rebounded, I think.
So from that point, you knew that Rutgers wasn't going to make Madison Square Garden, which was the goal. There's going to be a great chance to play strong RPI games. And instead, they get this substitute pod with William & Mary and Stillman College, whatever that is.
William & Mary was on the schedule already. Stillman College and FDU. William & Mary game was just a game, I guess, so they didn't have like a full week and a half off.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. So they didn't get there, whatever. now you got this game against William & Mary coming up. You figure, all right, you get through this one. Junior E2 comes back. You have a little depth. You get to, you know, 6-2 or whatever it would have been. 6-2 because you win three in a row against some weaker teams. But I guess Rutgers only had 8 players available yesterday.
Yeah.
Craig Brown got hurt against Drexel, needed stitches. He'll be out the next 3. E2 and Okoro are still out. So,
E2,
you know,
because of his suspension, and Okoro, what was his problem? Knee problem?
He had knee surgery. Okay. Should be back the end of December.
All right.
So there's no depth, but still, it's William & Mary. They're 1-3. They haven't won a road game. And things seemed to go well in the first half. I was watching Doctor Who. So, but the game was on. I had the game on my computer.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Rutgers is up 9, playing well, playing smoothly, doing what they should have done in it. And then there was a 20-0 run by William & Mary to start the second half. It just –
How did that make you feel?
I don't know what happened. I don't know. As a Rutgers fan, you got to think that at some point in some year, these losses will go away.
And it's kind of amazing because I don't think William & Mary's 1-3 is a particularly strong 1-3.
No.
I can check on that. But they've beaten Liberty. They've lost to Wichita State. That's strong. High Point's okay. Mm-hmm. Hampton, you know.
Yeah.
And there's so many things that are wrong with William & Mary. You know, they have a hard time getting talent. Oftentimes a hard time just defending. They have some injuries on the perimeter. And they have one really good player, and he's been pretty solid this season. But
yeah,
he and the rest of them looked amazing.
There have been quotes over the past 3 years by both Mike Rice and now Eddie Jordan about the players trusting the system.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that say? Is it the coaching or is it the players? I mean, I guess part of coaching is getting your players to trust the system if you really want to go to buy in. But what does it say when two different coaches can't get these players to trust the system, that they panic the moment something goes wrong?
Now, here I think there is – and a Mike Rice hangover might be a little too overly psychological. But I do think that if you have a coach that's very controlling, that's very much like, you do this, and if you don't do this, you are in serious trouble. I'm going to yell at you. It's very hard to switch from that to something that maybe is a little more, I don't know, IQ-oriented, a little bit more reactive.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like Rutgers has a little bit of that problem where, you know, they get into trouble and, yes, they panic. I mean, I don't think the talent is really there. But watching the William & Mary game in particular, the thing that I thought was fascinating was that I think William & Mary outplayed them the whole game. It's just that the shots weren't falling early. I thought that William & Mary ran their stuff really hard. They ran it really well. Rutgers looked like they were struggling at times to maintain contact, keep marking the guys who were running. And, you know, they run a lot of guys, like, through the center, then around to the wing, and then back out. And I don't know. I mean, I feel like I don't want to call out Wally Judge and Kadeem Jack necessarily, but I feel like those two guys in particular had a really hard time following bigs who were willing to run, following Tim Rustoven and I guess the other guys too, Gaylord or Gayard or however you pronounce his name.
Yeah, you said Mike Rice hangover. I almost think I don't know how much of yesterday's was also preseason NIT letdown as well.
Yeah.
You know, undermanned, so you couldn't even use the bench as a motivational tool. He couldn't sit anybody because he only had 8 players.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it's so frustrating. I mean, you're watching a team that I honestly think that at times the effort of a team that was just frustrated, you know, a Rutgers team that was frustrated. You saw guys kind of hang their heads, and the passing in that second half run, there were at least 2 passes where, you know, they're trying to go from, you know, one side of the elbow to the other. And the two players just had no idea where the other one was going. The ball would just go flying. It was weird. I mean, you don't really see that in high level basketball after, you know, the first game.
Right, I don't understand, and the problem, what really frustrates me is if you look at the talent on this team, yes, they're not the most talented. They don't have NBA, you know, type guys, maybe Kadeem Jack kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But this team is, it's six of the players at least were highly sought after recruits.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You should be able to not get bullied by, that's such a bad term to use around Rutgers, but beat up by, intimidated by Drexel and then lose to William & Mary.
And, you know, William & Mary, I think, really kind of out-athleted them at times.
There was a lot of running, dunks. You know, every time I looked down, I'm sorry. Ugh, now I'm starting to get fired up.
Yeah, well, Terry Tarpe was, in particular, there was one dunk he had in the second half where it was like, seriously? I mean, don't you want to, like, I don't know, hit that guy or get in his way? He pretty much just took a fast break and just ran to the rim.
Yeah.
And he put it down. And the whole time, he was just, you know, active, and they were out hustling them to tap loose balls. And I don't think they got a lot of offensive rebounds, but they were very active in a way that seems silly considering, like, Wally Judge is so big and Kadeem Jack is also so big.
Yeah, I agree. And Jack, see, a lot of people are talking about Jack and Judge as the reasons for this yesterday. And again, I was distracted watching other things at the same time. But I saw guards who could not get the ball to Kadeem Jack or Wally Judge in a position to score.
True.
The only time Jack got the ball was when he was, you know, just a step into the three-point line, and then he's stuck taking that jumper that he can hit, but not with consistency.
That you don't want a player to do that. You don't want that.
So where does the fault lie? I mean, is it a team that's learning a system and, yeah, the green light system worked against a Florida A&M and a Yale team, you know, when they needed it to, but when they actually have to play half-court offense, they're not comfortable yet? And that hurts? Is it a team that's exhausted already, 5-6 games into the season?
I will also say that the reason that I bring up Jack and more Wally Judge is that I felt that at times they weren't working very hard to get open. And I don't know if that was part of the system. You know, it wasn't their time to call for the ball. But there were definitely times where, you know, you'd see a guy who, you know, he should be making himself wide and open in the post.
Yeah.
And he didn't.
Yeah. There was one possession, I don't know if you saw this yet, I think it was in the first half, where Judge is calling for the ball and he thinks he has his guy posted, and Seager stands there trying to get him the ball and then actually has to dribble to get himself in a position where he could pass Judge the ball. And there was a call, I don't know if it was a foul or a travel or something, but it just turned into a turnover, you know, just because – and it's one of those things where it's – I don't even know whose fault this is, you know? Where is it? Is it Seager's because he put himself in a bad spot where he couldn't pass him the ball and then waited too long? Or is it Judge was posted up but not posted up in the right place to receive the ball?
Yeah.
You know, it was a very odd game. It really kind of takes the fire out of, hey, this is a new coach. It's a new era. You know?
When you get beat up like that.
Yeah. Because it's not just
run on.
Yeah, it's not just that they lost. All right, they lose a game by one or two, and yeah, this sucks. It's a, you know, a what the heck loss. They shouldn't have lost this game kind of thing. But a 20-0 run where you can't stop them, you know?
It's weird.
It's weird, and then they lose by, what was the fine? I don't even know the fine. They lose by 10.
Yeah.
You know?
And it wasn't just that they couldn't stop them. It was that William & Mary looked like, like the Big East team, and Rutgers looked like an NEC team. Yeah. And then an NEC team that had never played with each other before. You know, guys were just losing their man. They couldn't make passes. They seemed like they just had bad ideas. And then they were pressing.
Yeah. And you know, Jordan kept saying it, that this is – his system and William & Mary's system are extremely similar. And he said, you saw a team that trusted in their system and played the way he said, we want to play. Because, yeah, they got out and ran when the opportunities were there. And when they weren't, they ran their offense and made Rutgers pay over and over again.
Strange. Well, I'm sorry that happened. And next up is Stillman College. I don't know where that is, but
it's a Division III school.
Really?
Yeah. So it'll be nice. E2 will get some playing time, hopefully, and then FDU, who's 1-5, hopefully Rutgers can beat them.
Hopefully. You know, just like with St. John's, there's a whole lot of, it shouldn't be hard. Shouldn't, quote unquote. Right. You know?
But, yeah. So let's transition towards St. John's, because they had almost as interesting week as Rutgers did.
Whew. Well, yes. You know, St. John's week on its face, if you're a casual fan, seems like a fine enough week. You know, there are two wins, one over Bucknell, 67-63, one win over Monmouth, 64-54. Bucknell win, it's a little close, took some second half recovery. Monmouth is one of the worst teams in Division One, and the spread was 19.5. St. Yeah. John's won by 10.
But it was closer than that, wasn't it?
It was closer than that, yeah. And then on top of it, Rishi Jordan has been suspended, quote-unquote, indefinitely. Maybe he'll be back on Tuesday. Maybe he won't.
What? Yeah, what happened there?
I don't know. I couldn't tell you. Well, so, yeah, let's start with the suspension first.
Yeah.
Rishi Jordan just hasn't been, you know, he hasn't really played that well in his opening season in Division One, and that's, you know, that's fine. He's young, you know, he's trying to figure it out. Trying to figure out how to play it within the constraints of a system. He's a guy who basically was a team, much like D'Angelo Harrison was when he played in high school. So mm-hmm. I do think that there's something a little bit different about playing in that role. That said, Rishi Jordan's been okay. You know, he's averaged 4 points, 2 assists, 2 rebounds. He shot 23% from the floor, but he has been lengthy on defense, and he makes some interesting passes where he really helps some of St. John's real deficiencies, specifically their tendency to stay out of the paint. Rishi Jordan hasn't been polluted by some of the other ideas where, you know, the idea of shooting a very long jump shot instead of passing the ball into a cutting man at the rim. So, you know, that's, you know, that, so it's a loss. We don't really know what he did to violate team rules. You know, one hears that, you know, maybe his mom is sick or he's homesick or things like that. There are rumors.
Where's he from?
From Philadelphia, just down the road.
So, but he's not even practicing with the team right now is what I find to be off-putting.
And might just be a restriction from Lavin. You know, Lavin originally was saying something about how he will definitely be part of the program, but he was very vague about the things that he was saying. Mm-hmm. You know, he said that if he takes care of business, he'll be on the team. If he doesn't, he won't. And we don't know what that business is. It could be something as simple as not being a jerk in practice, honestly. Yeah. It really could be, because I think that that's part of what happened with D'Angelo Harrison last year, you know? Sometimes it's, I don't know. I mean, maybe it's school responsibilities. Like, I couldn't tell you. So it's bad optics. I will say that first and foremost, it's bad optics to have so many players seem to get suspended or in some sort of trouble. You know, Sir Dominic Poynter last year with the fight, D'Angelo Harrison getting booted from the team, Chris Obekpa getting suspended for a couple of games in preseason.
Preseason.
You know, it's bad optics. You know, it makes people think, oh, these are some out of control kids, you know. Oh, what kind of thugs is he bringing in, you know? I haven't heard anybody actually whip out the thugs, but you know it's coming. It's I'll be open and honest. It's a bunch of black kids and they get suspended. People start whipping out thug all over the place. That happens. So yeah, I don't know. I know this is a ramble, but yeah, just very confusing. Rishi Jordan's obviously an integral part of the team, even if he hasn't quite caught fire. So one hopes to see him back, and one hopes that whatever problem this is solvable, and this is just a teaching moment where, you know, if you do not do the things that Lavin wants you to do, he will tough love you and keep you off of the team. He doesn't need you.
Right.
And there's something admirable about that, you know, about the idea that he's not going to Urban Meyer the rules for you.
But it looks, on the outside, it all, like you said, it looks bad when – you know, I know you're trying to gain control, but and Jordan is the lone freshman on this team. But when you brought up all the suspensions, those guys are upperclassmen, mm-hmm. you know, and that shouldn't happen. Jordan is one thing. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So what's the deal? And Lavin doesn't seem like the kind of guy who loses control of the team.
And maybe this is how he maintains control. everybody knows that he will, you know, he will, he'll tell you that he doesn't need you to play. You know, he doesn't take that kind of crap that other coaches really might take, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, we don't know. So, Rhyshon Jordan is, we don't know. Maybe he'll be back for Longwood. Maybe this is a Rick Pitino kind of suspension where, you know, Rick Pitino said Shane Bohannon would probably not come back because he wasn't handling his responsibilities. He was back in a few weeks.
Yep.
You know, Pitino does that kind of thing all the time.
Yes, he does.
And it seems so dramatic because he's so dramatic. Mm-hmm. He's like, I can't imagine dinner at the Pitino's, you know? I mean, like, everything must seem, like, so intense, you know?
Yeah.
Like, this what? Turkey you... has to go back in the oven! This turkey is leaving this house! But, you know, soon you're slicing it and eating it, and it's all good. But back to the games themselves. St. John's had an interesting week on the court as well. In both games, in the win over Bucknell and the win over Monmouth, they had kind of the same problems. There were points where they were either tied or behind to both opponents. And Bucknell's a better opponent. They certainly look better than the fourth place team in the Patriot League. They have a lot of skill and a lot of shooting. But Monmouth is, they're just not good right now. And right. They're very young. They're like freshmen and sophomores. They're the like 14th youngest team in the NCAAs.
Mm-hmm.
But again, in both games, St. John's gave up leads and had to struggle and fight and really needed their shot blocking to alter the game. And it's a little worrisome. Also because both of those teams scored a lot of points in the paint. Bucknell scored 34 points in the paint on the game, and then Monmouth scored 32. 20 in the first half for Monmouth, 20 in the first half for Bucknell. And it seems that these teams have a solid way of getting at St. John's. You try to run a little bit. You try to go straight at Chris Obekpa so he's not the weak side blocker. And you use the porous holes in St. John's defense to get men in the paint and then make the right passes and get better shots sometimes at the rim. It's worrisome.
Yeah, I mean, I think the big thing we both have to remember and is that it is still November.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talk about Lavin losses and a lot. We've talked about it in season one. We brought up Lavin losses a lot. Mm-hmm. And you haven't really had one yet, but you have had some worrying signs.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a team that should get better as the year goes on.
Sure. And even in these games, we see that Lavin and the staff have made good enough second half adjustments. It's more the worry that you don't want to keep having to make second half adjustments, you know?
Right. You want to blow somebody out at some point.
Yeah, you want to handle your biz, you know? Mm-hmm. St. John's really did a good job defensively on Bucknell, cutting their three-point shooting from like 50% in the first half to 22%, and they found their stroke as well, going 3 of 7 from the field. Against Monmouth just couldn't shoot the three, and if they could, they probably would have upset St. John's. But mm-hmm. St. John's themselves had a very strong shooting second half. They went 4 for 7. And the problem in the first half against Monmouth wasn't actually, you know, people talk about the defense and letting Monmouth run on them. And I know some of the Rumbles guys have said that too. But I think, according to the numbers, St. John's really kind of slapped around Monmouth defensively, but they could not run their stuff on offense. They didn't get offensive rebounds. They didn't shoot inside the paint. They took a lot of jump shots. And that's been, you know, just the running St. John's problem. They take a lot of jump shots.
Yeah. And that's, you know, it's funny. That's a similar thing with Rutgers as well. It's a lot of jump shots. What is the deal with that? Is that hero ball? Is that not following, you know, what you're supposed to be following? Where does that psychology come from?
I mean, I think that for one, I do think that there's something very sexy about the jump shot, about the pull up jump shot in particular. You know, not the catch and shoot, the yo, I shook you free. You know, I step back, bam. You know,
yeah,
that's like very playground, and it's great when it works, but I think it's very hard for kids to realize that it doesn't work a lot of the time, that it's an ineffective shot. And you need a strong coach to get players to figure out how to get to the rim.
Yeah.
You know, like Marquette does generally a very good job of going at the rim and being a quote unquote paint team, hence the blog Paint Touches, for example.
Right, right.
And St. John's.
Ooh, shout out. I hope they're listening. Shout out.
Oh, yes. Shout out, Mark and crew. We got to have them on at some point. St. John's has this. I think there are a couple players who. Somebody honestly just needs to sit them down and practice, and with every jump shot, I think one of our commenters had this idea that they should have to run. I forget what they're called, like squeegees or something, like some sort of like suicide like run or push up run thing mm-hmm. for every foot of jump shot they take during a game. You know,
yeah,
because yeah. you have to remember, you know, drive. You know, it can't just be catch on the perimeter, pump fake, take a step and shoot, and then take long twos. That's not good offense. It's never going to work.
In basketball.
It is. It is.
It's not the 3-pointer. So you're not gaining as much, but it's not. You're not going to get fouled. It's just as long. It's the worst shot in basketball.
Yeah.
So
I mean, you do need a team that. And a scheme that finds ways of getting the ball in the paint. And one thing you notice if you watch St. John's is that they'll run guys through the middle and through the paint, but nobody ever stops and flashes in the middle and that sort of in where that dead zone would be in the 2-3 zone. And I'm not saying, you know, it has to be against a 2-3 zone, but maybe just have a guy working in the high post, just somebody who can pass, maybe Orlando Sanchez, you know, and then have some cutters running off of that.
So let me ask you, in your opinion, is this wake-up week for both teams? Is this the sort of thing that's going to wake up Rutgers and say, okay, maybe we should, you know, listen to what our coach is saying? And is this the sort of thing where, you know, it'll wake up Jordan and for that matter, St. John's and get them to play the way their coach wants them to play? Is this wake-up week, do you feel?
Well, I think the end of this week will be wake-up week for St. John's. I think that if they didn't wake up after the preseason game and realize that without Chris Obekpa, the defense is a little bit of a sieve. You know, guys are definitely getting touches. Opponents are getting touches deep in the paint. And if they didn't wake up against Bucknell and handle business against Monmouth, I don't know. I mean, Longwood hopefully will be an easy win.
Yeah. Well, but, so should Stillman College for that matter.
Sure. But Penn State, I mean, whoever wins between Georgia Tech and Ole Miss will certainly be a tough opponent. But Penn State, I mean, they're not great, but they're going to want to make a show of the game. So, yeah. And they're going to have slightly better talent than these other teams. So if they're running their stuff well, you know, the team that beat LaSalle could beat St. John's.
Right. That's true. I mean, but I guess here's a more philosophical type question. Mm-hmm. What do you find works in college basketball? Since you've been watching it as long, if not longer than I have, what do you think? Because you're older. Just remind the audience out there.
Oh, yes. I just turned 50. I remember when Lincoln was assassinated.
I think your math is off there.
Yeah, you're right. I don't even remember Kennedy.
Neither do I. For most teams, what do you think is more inspirational and turns a team around, a big win or an embarrassing loss?
Big win. Yeah. An embarrassing loss can send a team easily into a tailspin and players will start questioning themselves. A big win? Big win makes you think, yeah, we can do this. St. John's, 2011, with Dwight Hardy and Justin Burrell and Justin Brownlee. That team wasn't really all that good. And then they had that ridiculous loss to Fordham, just like probably the worst game I've seen live. Just it didn't make any sense, and they lost it so badly in the second half. It was actually very much like the William and Mary sort of thing. You're playing against a team that has like one win or something, and they just put it on you late.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I think that did help turn them around a little bit. You know, the idea that, you know, they played Davidson, they played Northwestern and somehow held them down. But then they went out and they played West Virginia, who was ranked, I don't know, like top 20 at the time, I want to say.
Right.
And they played this amazingly deliberate, strong brand of basketball. And after that, you started thinking, wow, this team might be able to do something. You know, yeah. It didn't feel like a fluke anymore because right. they'd beaten two, you know, okay teams, two good, well-coached teams. But then they went down to West Virginia against Bob Huggins and did their thing. And you're like, wow. And I think after that you saw – and they had some losses, but you saw a team that started to believe and started to really play the way they needed to and beat Duke.
Duke, later. I was at that game. I brought my dad, the Duke fan, to that game and was in my glory.
Oh, my God. That's awesome.
I hate Duke. So – but, yeah, I feel the big win – I agree with you. The big win is what can really show a team that, hey, the system works. That sort of thing. But I guess what I have to hang in hope on is that the William and Mary game this year is much like the Fordham game for St. John's that year.
Mm-hmm.
That it kind of shows Rutgers, hey, I mean, it's only six games in, they're 3-3. It's not like they're 1-6. And in the grand scheme of things, yes, this looks really bad and is more likely to be a sign of terrible things to come. But if the coaches can do this right and use this loss to show the team, hey, let's try what we want you to do. Follow the system and it works.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe in the long run, it's a wake-up call. Maybe it's a Lavin loss. We'll call it a Jordan loss.
Yeah. Well, here's a question.
Mm-hmm.
Junior Itoo, he's projected to be a power forward, right?
Yeah. They think he's going to swing between the three and the four.
Okay. I guess side question then. Who are the ball handlers on this team? Just Mac and Seegers?
Mac, Seegers, and Campbell.
Okay.
And I guess J.J. Moore.
No.
Yeah, I know.
It was funny here during the game, I think John Celestand was talking about how you shouldn't pass your ball to your big man as he's running in a way that makes him have to dribble. This was a pass from something like Mac to J.J. Moore where he stepped on the end line, I think maybe early in the second half.
Yes, I remember that play, actually.
And I remember thinking... And Celestine corrected himself, but I remember thinking, this is the problem with J.J. Moore. You know, you think that he can do so many things, but practically, those things aren't, they're not, like, he's not the sum of his parts, you know?
No, he's not. And I believe Brendan Prunty, who, by the way, and I know you have, Norman, but this is for the listeners, if you haven't read his last two, the Tippins after the Canisius and the Drexel games, get out. Fantastic. It's some of the best basketball writing I've read, pointed out that J.J. Moore, after running Pittsburgh's offense for three years and now being in a green light offense, J.J. Moore is like a starving kid at a Sizzler's all-you-can-eat buffet. So,
and it
I mean,
shows, by the way.
It
I
does
really
show.
Do think it shows. I mean, some of the shots that he takes are just like, son,
yes.
I mean, what planet – or what Division One planet do you think that this is okay? They're
yeah.
out of rhythm. They're just kind of cockamamie shots that are – they're hero ball shots.
And I don't understand that because he can't – I mean, yes, I understand it's a green light offense. It's a different offense, and you're trying to, you know, to show yourself, especially against the William and Mary. But he's a guy who played for a team where it worked, you know, a solid
how much
work.
He played for a team that worked.
That's true.
He wasn't
yeah.
the starter, and he often found himself in the doghouse.
Yeah.
And I guess
so
this is why.
I was so excited about him. I was so excited.
You should still be. I mean, in terms of the talent that Rutgers could get, he's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I mean, this is still going to be an up-and-down year, hopefully. There's they're going to have, you know, when they're whole. I've been saying you can't judge this team until it's whole.
Mm-hmm.
Until at least you get Itoo. But you still can't judge them for another two more games because Craig Brown is out the next two games as well. Mm-hmm. They're not going to play him. So they're still only going to be 8-9 deep, you know, with Itoo. And you want him to be 11 deep because you can see Mac is getting worn down.
Yeah.
Every one of his shots yesterday, he still scored 11, but his shots in the second half were all front rim.
Oh, that's tough.
So, yeah, it's six games in and he's worn down. So that's worrsome.
He has to play a lot of minutes, I mean, without any other ball handlers.
Yeah. Ball handlers.
You're 10.
But, and still, that Eddie Jordan press is terrible.
Yeah. It's got
it
holes.
It is so terrible. Yeah, it's got easy holes. And if a team wants to run, they clearly can.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, though. I mean, I think that they did bother them at times with the occasional backcourt press and trap, but just not enough.
Not enough, no. And, you know, William and Mary answered every time Rutgers tried to get momentum going.
Yep.
So, and but St. John's, to their credit, when Monmouth pushed them, they managed to survive, even with bad play.
Yeah, and, you know, Steve Lavin has said consistently that he feels that this is a team that's going to be better in February and March than it is right now, which is, you know, I think people worry about that because you're talking about, you know, a team that has guys who've played together for 3 years. That's supposed to be the strength of having so many highly ranked prospects who got to start as freshmen, you know? But,
yeah,
you know, there are different ways. And honestly, Lavin's teams have always been a bit like this. This is where the idea of the Lavin loss comes in. You have a team that hasn't quite figured out what they want to do, and a coaching staff that's figuring out how to properly utilize everybody, and then they go and lose to Ball State. And then right. when conference play comes around, it clicks, and then you just see this athletic team that runs all the hell over people, and you know, it gets better.
Yeah, and I mean, Jordan said the same thing yesterday. He says, you know, he keeps talking about his system and learning the system and being patient with it. And, you know, that hopefully it's clicked by January 30th, where it clearly hasn't now, November 30th.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was his point. And, hey, if that happens, that's great. If this team clicks and does get on a run, I've never seen a Rutgers team get on a run. Well, right. So who does – St. John's has Longwood and Penn State coming up this week?
St. John's has Longwood, Penn State, and the winner of Ole Miss versus Georgia Tech, which I'm getting actually quite, if you will, excited about. Mm-hmm. Because I think both of those teams are very interesting.
Oh, cool.
And who does Rutgers have?
Stillman and Fairleigh Dickinson, and then they're off till December 4th. And then they have another run of swing games, but we'll talk about that next week.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Rutgers at least has an easy week.
Yeah. Hopefully. Because it's Monday and Tuesday, and they're still undermanned. I mean, you got to think Stillman should be a big win. Mm-hmm. Especially if they come out angry, which they should. That was one of the other interesting Jordan quotes after Drexel. He said, we kept having to tell the team that it's still a basketball game to make basketball plays, that you could play with a chip on your shoulder and make basketball plays. And I think his point was the team just gets rattled. You know, Drexel got physical with them, and they started making dumb plays and rather get revenge and be just as physical instead of running the system and winning.
I think they get down. I mean, I think they do need a psychologist's couch. Watching them against William and Mary in particular, you definitely saw some heads hanging, some just lazy movement. You know, mm-hmm. whether it was a lazy follow through the lane or whether it was just like a distracted, you know, cut to get oneself open. And that's where at least one of those bad passes came from. It was just sort of like, what is the other guy even doing? He's just sort of like hiding or something.
Oh, well.
Oh, well.
So this has been another episode of Not Half Bad, which is perilously close to changing its title.
To the thank all God bad for, edition.
Yeah, thank God for St. John's at least getting some wins. I am Dave of OnTheBanks.com. You can find me on Twitter at Dave_White. And please don't tweet at me about how much better football is, because that drives me crazy.
And this is Norman of Rumble in the Garden, covering St. John's, and you can tweet at me about anything you want at E Coast Bias. You can also tweet at the Rumble at Rumble SBN. Let us know what you want to hear or the questions that you have. And if you have questions for us on the podcast, you can email us at nothalfbadpod@gmail.com. Thank you for those who already have emailed
us. Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, that is really cool. And you can also reach us on Twitter at NHBpod. We're always looking to improve, so if you have ideas, let us know. And we will be getting some guests on, by the way. We're just, you know, working our way into the rhythm of the season.